Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Gerrard. Why are we here, Phil? I need to know.
Well, we are going to talk about the world's greatest disasters and some ones you have never heard of. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or dear old God in the sky's fault.
And remember, Phil, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates of some of these disasters. We're just interested in finding out what went wrong, aren't we, Phil?
We are.
And be honest with yourself. If it came on the news, I reckon you'd be interested.
Turn on, tune in, get chocolate, don't move. Love it.
What are we wanging on about this week?
The Moorgate tube disaster.
I think the first person to realise something was not right was the signalman on Moorgate platform, who saw the train go past his cabin at rather an excessive speed. I think some of the passengers began to realise that all was not well when they approached Moorgate at a very, very high speed, which caused the car to roll and hit bump stops and so forth.
Everybody sort of looked at each other and wondered what was happening, and the next we knew was the train suddenly came to a dead stop, and I was flung forward about 9 or 10 seats, and I landed with a group of people by the doors all on top of each other.
Well, it was pitch black.
Yes.
People were picking themselves up, asking each other how they were.
Yes.
A few people were moaning, help me, and things like that.
Yes.
But most of all, people were saying don't panic, and they didn't panic.
There were two ladies trapped by their legs. There was also another lady about a foot. She seemed to be up in the air somewhat. And there was a man, and he seemed to me to be pinned to the ceiling of the train, as if he was on a luggage rack. Mm. They force had, you know, knocked him up there.
I was very fortunate the other week to be allowed to go on a cab ride in a tube. And I went up and down the Bakerloo line twice in the cab, which was probably the greatest day of my life.
I know this may sound like a very strange euphemism, but did you have your hand on a dead man's handle?
I didn't, because I didn't drive it.
So you just sat in the cab?
I sat in the cab.
What was it like?
Excellent.
What happened?
I went up and down the Bakerloo line twice. Yeah. I went through tunnels.
Yeah.
I went into the open bit.
Yeah.
We stopped at stations.
Yeah. Having watched this gentleman driving this train, do you think his pay is justified? They do get paid a lot,
55
right?
grand.
55 grand?
55 grand.
Why?
It's a lot of money, to be fair, isn't it?
It is. it is 55 grand. I mean, that to me feels like you should own the tube.
But there aren't many jobs where the chance of someone throwing themselves in front of your job and splattering
is a
distinct possibility.
Have you ever seen that happen?
God, no.
I haven't either, but it happens to them a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
People throwing themselves on the line.
My dad used to have to deal with things like that a bit when he was on the railway.
Really?
Yes, because part of his role was to send the machinery to places where things had happened.
Oy.
And sometimes things had happened, like people jumped in front of trains or in the old days when my dad was on the railway, you had windows where you'd stick your head out and get decapitated.
Oh yeah, of course, so, like in the Young Ones.
Yeah,
that's true, isn't it? I forgot about people chucking themselves in front of the train, because that happens quite a lot. I think it is a recognised way of offing yourself in it.
Yes.
So Phil,
the
Moorgate tube disaster.
Yes.
What was it?
It was a crash on the London Underground where a tube train failed to stop at Moorgate Station and crashed into its end wall.
When did it happen?
The 28th of February 1975.
And how many people died?
43.
One of the things I want to talk about that's interesting about this one is that it's our first mystery disaster.
Yeah, I guess
Did you like the way I said that?
Yeah.
You don't think it was over-egged in any way?
Slightly. I'm sure we've had a few nobody knows.
Not like nobody knows in this one. This is a proper, like,
is
what
it?
Was that?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, yeah.
I think this one's sinister.
Oh, it's very sinister. Yeah. I just don't know whether the actual end result is something we've never had. But you've looked into it more than me. That's what you've decided. That's what we'll go with. I'm not going to give the game away by saying anything just to yet now.
Well, what else do we have that was mysterious? I can't think of another one that was mysterious.
At the moment, I can't even remember if I brushed my teeth this morning, Phil.
I'm here to tell you that you didn't.
No, I suppose it's different in the sense it's incredibly simplistic what actually happened.
Yes.
But nobody really knows why it happened.
And the last moments are spine-tingling. Aren't they?
Creepy.
And the phrase dead man's handle.
Yeah, never been more accurate.
Never been more accurate, has it, in this case? Okay, now, so Phil, Philip Lucas, tell me about the world-famous London Underground.
Well, I mean, do we really need to explain the Tube to anyone? I mean...
Imagine a tube in the ground filled with trains.
Well, yeah. I'm going to give you four amazing facts about the London Underground.
Okay.
Number one, only 45% of the Underground is actually in tunnels.
Big liars.
Mm. Well, London some Underground.
Yeah, I guess so. Train system. London train system. Yeah.
London Metro.
Yeah. Why?
That's probably a bus company.
I don't understand that, though, because it's all underground.
It's not.
It is, though. Every time I've used it, I've gone underground in it.
That's because when you go to London, you probably go to Westminster or Oxford Street. You don't go, I'm going to go to South Ruislip today.
Good point. Although, if 45% of it is underground and the other 55% is overground, why is there a part of it called the London Overground? Is 45% of that underground?
That's a very good point. That's an amalgamation of all sorts of lines, isn't it? And then someone just in a branding company came up and went,
yeah, that's right.
What are you going to do? Yeah,
The London only Overground is like the bits of an IKEA piece of furniture you didn't know what to do with. Fact me two times.
Jerry Springer was born in Highgate Station.
Actually in the station?
In the station, because, you know, like in the wartime, where they used to go down there to, as air raid
shelters. Escape from the bombs and that.
Yeah, his mum gave birth to him when she was down there during that time.
Bloody hell.
Jerry Springer, born in an underground station.
Do you like Jerry Springer?
Yeah, he's cool, right?
You know when
Never watch him, but...
You know when Jerry Springer, that show came out, everyone was like, this is the end of human civilization.
Yeah.
If they could conceive of how awful everything is now.
Yeah, I mean...
Jerry Springer looks like... amazing now. It looks like just people getting on.
There's obviously the fact people don't get on anymore.
No.
But I mean, Naked Attraction. If you think television could sink any lower than Jerry Springer, then there's a whole borehole to go down.
Naked Attraction seems like, you know, when people talk about the last days of Rome or the last days of the Nazis, you know, like the Russians are approaching what they were doing to each other in the Reichstag before the Soviets arrived. Naked Attraction seems like one of those stories we're going to tell in 2130. Like, in the last days of it, there was this TV program called Naked Attraction where people would rate each other's genitals and then go out on a really, really tense date.
I like when they get someone gets rejected and they walk out and absolutely start bollock naked.
Yeah.
They go, what'd you do? Oh, well, you know, I'm a telephone receptionist at an optician's. And you go, you've got to go back to work the following day.
That's what I don't understand.
Everyone's seen your
they've got to go back to
your
work.
Chunker and your whammers.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I would understand people doing that if they walked out of the studio straight into an open fire.
Yeah.
It was a way of committing suicide. Like, you just show everybody your bollocks and then that's it. You just die then. Because how do you go back to work?
I don't even want to be naked in front of a mate in a gym changing room.
I don't want to be naked in a room with a mirror in it. Why? And also, the thing about Naked Attraction is, I imagine they rerun those shows, so the chances are that you could just be flicking through channels and there's your dick from 10 years ago.
Yeah. Is that you, Mum?
There's Mum's vag again. And like, I just don't understand Naked Attraction. It is a terrifying, awful programme.
Awful.
Fact me three times.
The inaugural journey of the first Central Line train in 1900 had Mark Twain on board.
Bloody hell, really?
Something in it.
Mark Twain.
Good writer, Mark Twain.
Did Mark Twain get his name from a way of telling how fast boats were going?
Don't know.
On the old river boats, but Mark Twain would be
around. He did love the old big boats, didn't he? Paddle boats.
And I think that the way they would tell how fast those boats were going is that you had a line, right, called the Twain,
right,
and it had knots in it, and you threw it over the side and then counted how many knots reappeared over a period of time. And when they had gone from one knot to another marker knot, the person who was doing it would shout out to the man with the stopwatch, Mark Twain! And Mark Twain heard that and thought it was a good idea.
I'll be damned.
But I tell you what, to me, that's so perfect a story, I reckon it's probably bollocks.
Yeah.
But
it's too good, isn't it?
It is too good. It's too
like, oh, wow, that's so cool.
Because
it's not.
Because it's not true.
Yeah.
Okay, fact me four times.
Actor. Simon Cadell.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you remember him. He's now sadly departed, but he played holiday camp manager Jeffrey Fairbrother in TV series Heidi High.
Was he the really thin one?
Yeah, he was quite thin. He was quite an Oxbridge-educated camp, totally out of his league.
Totally out of his depth.
If you're in America, YouTube it, if you're that bothered. Anyway, he is still the Mind the Gap voice at Bank Station.
Mind the Gap.
And only Bank Station.
Why only Bank Station?
Don't know. Most of the tube has the same Mind the Gap, but yeah. Bank Station, Simon Cadell.
Really? Mind the Gap. The thing that annoys me about Mind the Gap is I used to like Mind the Gap, and I suppose where Mind the Gap is famous, it still is Mind the Gap. But in other stations now, it's Mind the Gap between the train and the platform. Like, we couldn't work out where the gap was. Like, at some point, someone's gone, where's the gap? Yeah. People need to be told about the gap. They need to know which gap we're talking about. If you can't be told Mind the Gap and think that's probably going to be between the train and the station.
Yeah. Oh, you
then you deserve to get crushed by a train. Where else is the gap going to be? It's not floating around in the ether ready to land on you and take your head off. So, Phil, you said this thing happened at Moorgate.
Moorgate.
Tell me more about Moorgate.
Moorgate is an area in the city of London. It's right
London,
by...
London, Phil?
London, big city, capital of Britain.
Oh, yes, where all opinion comes from. I know London. Yes,
that's the one, right. The bubble. Yeah. The British bubble. Yeah, it's right by the Barbican.
Oh, I like the Barbican.
Brutal, beautiful, brutalist concrete art centre. But essentially, all you need to know, Phil, is think of the City of London.
Yep.
Big buildings, banks, posh coffee shops.
Wall-to-wall wankers.
That's Moorgate. Yeah. Right, that's Moorgate. And it's got a tube station.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right?
Okay.
Good enough?
Yeah, that's fine. Do you know what? Exemplary, Phil. Absolutely exemplary. Moorgate's quite a big station though, isn't it?
Very big. Yeah, lots of platforms. What they call an interchange. With...
So it's where loads of lines cross over each other.
Yeah, or an intersection. Yeah, loads of lines. So you could get off one train.
Yeah.
You could walk ages down really hot tunnels.
Yep.
Be bombarded by crap buskers.
Yep.
And then catch a tube train that's on another line.
Yeah.
Now, in 1975, which is the year we're talking about, the Metropolitan Line, the Circle Line, the Northern Line, and something called the Northern City Line all went to Moorgate. Now, regular tube travellers may not recognise the name Northern City Line as not one of your big 11, is it?
No.
Not your Piccadilly, not your Central, not your Metropolitan, your Circle, your District, your Victoria, your Jubilee, your Hammersmith
Bakerloo.
And City, your Bakerloo, your Waterloo and City.
Overgram.
Ah, doesn't count.
No, didn't it?
Oh, that's 10. I'm missing one.
Is there a special one to get Winston Churchill out safe?
Anyway, not one of your big 11. Okay. But it was a line that at the time went from its northern terminus at Drayton Park, which is in Islington, down to its southern terminus at Moorgate.
Right.
And it was a line that only had four stops. And it was sometimes referred to as the Highbury branch. It sort of came under the auspices of the Northern Line, but it kind of was its own little thing as well. It didn't really link anything.
But it's going top to bottom.
It's going top to bottom. Very short, only these sort of four stations. Nowadays, it's part of the London Overground network.
Oh, is it?
Even though some of it is underground. But in those days, it was run by London Underground, and they use good old bog standard tube trains.
Pip. Right.
So just think of a tube train in a tube tunnel.
Yep.
And you'll be fine.
Done.
So the Northern City Line, it was a tube train.
Tube train.
A bog standard tube train.
Yeah.
You've all seen them, Phil. Yeah. You've seen them.
Been on them.
Hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Stop going on about it, Phil. It's just a tube train. Tell me what happened on the 28th of February, 1975.
Well, Phil, this 28th of February, 1975 started like any other. Before we get into the meat of this disaster, would you like to know what was number one in the charts on the 28th of February, 1975?
Yes,
I'm going to bloody tell you. It was only this.
Come up and see me.
Do you know what Come and See Me Makes Me Smile is about?
Well, it sounds like sex.
No, it isn't. Oh. It's great. It sounds like it's a really nice song, like Come Up and See Me Make Me Smile, like we'll have sex, like you say. Mm. What it is that Steve Harley was in another band that wasn't doing very well, and they sacked him. And so instead of like going off and getting a job, he started a new band, and then they got quite famous. So he wrote a song which is basically, come round and see me, make me fucking smile, like the old, like to the old band.
Oh,
yeah, come round and see how I'm doing, make me smile. That's what it is. So it's like a fuck you to his old band.
You know, I did once see an interview with him, and I thought, God Almighty, you're a confident lad.
He's not. He's not the. I'm not going to say he's not a nice man.
Yeah,
but he doesn't come across him.
So based on what you just said and the interview I saw, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Right, to the meat, Phil. Are you ready for the meat of this disaster?
Give me the meat.
The train in question on this day in 1975 was the 8:38 from Drayton Park. This particular train left half a minute late.
Nothing new there.
But everything up until the point of reaching Moorgate was normal and uneventful. So it's just a normal day on a trains.
Right.
Everybody's getting up, going to work in the city, right? Everyone miserable. You see, there's a specific type of misery on the tube, isn't there? My God. Yeah. And I've heard people say this about London, is the only way that you can live in London, really, especially in these really, really populated, high commutery workplace places, is just by ignoring everything. And so, you know, when you go on a really packed commuter train, even though people are literally pressed up against each other's faces, just the level of ignoring. Just ignore it. Just pretend it's not happening. Okay, so the train stops in all the right places. It travels at the right speed. And the driver, 56-year-old Leslie Newson, now remember him, he's extremely important for the story. He wasn't doing anything different to what he'd always done.
Okay.
Leslie had been working on the London Underground for 6 years.
Ooh, long
he was
time.
An old hand at the Underground.
Okay, yeah.
I think he'd be pretty good at driving a train after 6 years.
6 years, yeah. Okay.
Although he'd only been working on the Northern City Line for 3 months.
But how hard is it?
It's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a train and a tunnel. Previously, before this accident, in fact, he'd driven onto this platform, Platform 9, 121 times.
Right, so even though he'd only been on that line 3 months, even though he'd been on the tube network for a long time, 121 times.
What we're trying to say is this man was fucking wicked at driving a train onto Platform 9. He smashed it every single time.
121 times, in fact.
121 times.
Faultless.
Not an issue. So what was Leslie Newson like?
Well, he was married to his wife, Helen, for about 30 years. Yeah. Had children. He was an ex-World War II veteran. He was actually on beaches at Dunkirk.
Was he really?
Yeah. Colleagues called him a careful, conscientious and cheerful chap. On the day of the disaster, he arrived for work at about 10 past 6 in the morning.
Yep.
Didn't usually have breakfast, but always made a cup of tea at home before work.
Standard.
When he got to work, he was carrying his work satchel.
Standard.
Flask of milk.
Lovely.
Some sugar.
Yeah.
His rule book.
Yeah.
And a notebook.
Right.
He also had on him 270 quid in his jacket because he was going to buy his daughter a second-hand car after he'd finished his shift.
Now, all of this is important for the mystery of this, isn't it? Because, we'll get onto it later, but a man with 270 quid in his jacket to buy a car, a man who's thought to bring his own sugar to work, and who's got a flask of milk, which may or may not be laced with whiskey. We'll go on to it later. These do not seem to be the decisions of a man who is going to do what this gentleman is going to do. Is that right, Phil?
Absolutely right, Phil. Staff reported that he appeared his normal self as he sat down with them before his shift and had another cup of tea.
Right.
During that time, he shared some milk from his milk flask with one of his colleagues.
Yeah.
And another one asked Newson for some sugar, to which Newson replied, "Go easy with it. I shall want another cup when I come off duty."
See, that is fairly unequivocal, isn't it? Mm. Unless he was a master manipulator and he wanted to throw him off the scent. Newson, remember him?
Yeah.
He started his shift at 6:24 a.m. He's had a cup of tea.
Mm.
He's had a nice chat.
Yeah.
Right? He's put one of his sugars in a tea. He turns up to work with a flask of milk, gently chides his colleagues about their borrowing of his sugar. It pisses him off every day, borrow his fucking sugar. And he gets on with his job.
Normal.
So the train he was driving, train 272, had already been going up and down that line that morning with Newson at the controls.
Okay.
For the fateful journey, it was carrying about 300 passengers, right? Because it's Friday rush hour.
Well, that's a lot.
It's going to be rammed, isn't it, right? Also because the exit at Moorgate was at the end of the platform nearest the front of the train. And we all know what savvy commuters are like. You get to the front of the train nearer the exit.
Because you get off quicker,
get off
less
quicker.
Crowds, less to walk.
Isn't it annoying when you're on the tube and you get off and there's like people, tourists, and they just stand?
Yeah,
they get
off
the train to stand. Just move.
Mm. Just think, I don't know what to do. I'll get out of the way.
Get out of the way.
Of the people that do.
I'll work it out.
No,
don't
you know
just
why?
Stand.
Selfish.
Don't stand. Like people do it. They have to put a sign at the bottom of the escalator saying, don't stop when you. Who gets to the bottom of the escalator and fucking stops?
The public.
Just keep walking. Just go somewhere. Anyway, it was so basically what we're trying to say is the front of this train was rammed.
Was
the whole
rammed.
Thing was rammed.
The whole thing was
front
busy.
Was really rammed, right? About 800 metres before Moorgate, Newson passed a green signal.
Green, go.
Green means go, doesn't it?
Mm.
This is the point that he would normally started slowing down for the end of the line.
Mm.
Okay. Now, for some reason, Newson didn't slow down.
If anything, I think he sped up, I heard.
If anything, he sped up. The train then passed another green signal 400 metres later at the same speed.
Mm.
Right? At this point, the train was going about 35 miles an hour. Doesn't sound like loads.
Quite a lot in a tube.
Quite a lot in a tube, and it should have been going 15, top speed 15.
Wow, big difference.
I mean, I can't do the maths, but I'm saying double. 35 miles an hour is about the speed it came to the platform at Moorgate. If you're on the platform at Moorgate, you would have known something's wrong, because that is a train rocketing into the platform, right?
Gotcha, yeah. Trains now aren't allowed to come into platforms any more than 10 miles an hour.
Yeah. The first person, Phil, to realise something wasn't right was the signalman at Moorgate Station.
Okay.
He quickly realised the train was zipping past him far too quickly.
Oh, all right, Poirot.
They wouldn't have been disturbed at this point, though, right? They'd have gone, oh, that's a bit strange, right? And what I mean is, at this point, would he have gone, whoa?
Yeah, I think it would have been a bit shock. You wouldn't expect it, would you? But not in a, oh my God!
Alarm bells wouldn't be ringing. He'd be like, oh, all right, mate.
Oh, all right, Dennis.
All right, Dennis. Yeah. Too many sugars. Okay. Some of the passengers also realised something wasn't quite right at this point, because the train was clattering into the station over points far faster than it should have been. So you would have felt that.
Oh, yeah, it would have been jiggling around like a...
You'd have been thrown around.
Oh, wooden roller coaster, wouldn't it?
Moorgate, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the end of the line.
Yes.
So what you've got after the station is an overrun tunnel.
Right.
That within it has a very short runoff.
So if you were standing on the platform, it would very much look like it was going off into another tunnel somewhere else.
But it's not.
But it's not, actually. It's just going...
It's just going a bit further. And then, at the end of that, what have you got, Phil?
You have got a big, disgusting old brick and concrete wall that's a metre and a half thick.
Oh, it's a metre and a half thick?
Yeah.
Do you think people on the platform knew that?
Just because it's a terminus station doesn't mean it doesn't go off to a depot or something.
I wouldn't assume there was a wall there. It does seem short-sighted, right? That it just ends in a wall.
Yeah.
There's usually like buffers and like bits and sandbags. I don't know what trains
work. Well, the universe has got to end somewhere, hasn't it? It's got to be a stopping point, surely.
You think the universe ends?
My life can only be made sense of by things are in things.
Life only makes sense if things are in things.
Well, I'm in a room, it's in a house, the house is in a street, the street is in a town, the town is in a city, the city is in a country, the country is in a continent, blah, 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 in the world, in the universe. So then what? I don't know.
I understand.
That's why I'm very unhappy.
I understand the existential point that things have to be in things, but I don't agree that a tunnel has to end in a wall. I think you can put buffers in there. Have a sandbag.
But then what?
Build a lake. Anything.
Lake would have been good.
A lake would have been good. Yeah. It would have just... Psh.
Yeah.
Anyway, one eyewitness, a Mr. Butt, Philip Lucas. An eyewitness, a Mr. Butt, was waiting on the platform at Moorgate just before the tunnel. He was the last person to see Mr. Newson alive. And this is when I think it gets wonderfully sinister.
Mm.
A bit spine-tingling. Mr. Butt said that he saw Mr. Newson, the train driver, driving through the station at 35 miles an hour. When he saw him, Newson was sitting bolt upright with his hands on the controls, looking straight ahead of him. Right? Other people on the station corroborated this. Right? One of them said, Phil...
He appeared to be staring straight ahead with no emotion on his face as the train hurtled past.
So he's just staring. Just sat bolt upright staring. But doing the work.
Yeah.
Not asleep. Not slumped over, just driving steadily towards a wall.
Oh, my God.
Do you know what I mean? Another witness, Mr. Board, was able to see the driver as the train came all the way along the platform. He said that Newson was sitting completely upright and his hands appeared to be in the normal operating positions.
Right.
And one on the dead man's handle and one on the, I guess, the steering wheel.
Buttons.
His hands was on the buttons, mate.
Yeah, things. Right?
He made no movement as the train approached and Mr. Boards gained the impression that he was paralysed or frozen in his position.
Oh.
Now then, this is the thing that really gets me. He was particularly struck by the appearance of his eyes. Right? Because his eyes seem to be staring straight ahead and to be somewhat larger than life.
Oh, this is really now, freaky.
To me, somewhat larger than life seems to be a person who's... He's saying scared, isn't he? He's saying his eyes were...
Do you think?
What do you take from that meaning, somewhat larger than life? And that means his eyes were wide open staring.
It's almost like he knows what's coming, but
can't move.
Just cannot move. He's frozen in time.
Yeah, and he's watching, like he's watching it come.
Oh my God!
I mean, the thing is that might not be what happens because we don't know what happens. But that's what his eyes seem somewhat larger than life. And what a fabulously sinister way of putting it. A final witness, a Miss Stewart, said that she saw the driver through the front window of his cab, sitting upright and looking forward. So this has been corroborated by quite a few people now. And there's lots of people on this platform, and they've all seen him come. So there's probably quite a few eyewitnesses of him. So we can be pretty certain of that this is how he was sat.
Yeah.
Mrs. Stewart, she felt that he seemed quite aware of the situation, but thought he looked very tense. Mm. That's a lot to take from a second.
I
mean, it's a lot to say. I mean,
I can't remember a tube driver I've ever really looked at.
Exactly. I mean, like, how long would you have to think that driver looks a bit tense? I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it?
But they've all said the same thing.
They have all said the same thing.
And maybe these people did look more because the train was faster. Maybe they might have done,
and it would have
fast.
Made noise as it came in. Yeah. If a train does come into the station, you are watching, you are looking.
I guess you do see the driver because nothing happens, you don't pay much attention to it.
Well, I always try and watch the driver because I want to see what 55 grand buys you. You see if they come in there fucking Ralph Lauren. Gold chains, smoking a cigar. Shortly after these witnesses had made their observations, Newson sped through into the runoff section of the line, making no attempt to stop whatsoever. And then the train smashed head-on into the great big metre-and-a-half-thick concrete wall.
Oh.
A surviving passenger on the train said, Phil?
As darkness came, there was a very loud noise, metal and glass breaking, no screams, all in the fraction of the second it takes one to breathe. It was all over in no time.
I mean, I suppose it would be, wouldn't it? It was hitting the wall. Bang!
But the carnage was inconceivable. But at first, Phil, the firefighters on the scene, and they arrived very shortly after this, they didn't know that. They actually had no idea what they were facing. All they knew was there was an incident at Moorgate train station with a tube. One of the firefighters who was there said,
We came down the stairs and turned to the left.
And as we turned to the left, we saw a train carriage, and it was the double doors, a row of seats and a bulkhead. The other side of that, the driver. That's how we perceived it at that moment in time. Train it to buffers. That's what all we got told, train it to buffers. So we thought, front of the train, buffers are about 10 foot away. And then the word came back that we had two more carriages in there, three more carriages in there. And we still couldn't build this picture up of how long was this tunnel? Where's the buffers? Then we got told, of course, it was a dead-end tunnel.
When they first get there, there's no clue of how freaking awful this is inside this train.
Now, Phil, because I like trains,
yes,
I'll give you some idea of the makeup of these trains. Now, these trains were normally six carriages in length.
Right.
And that is made up of two sets of three carriages joined together.
Right.
When the fire brigade turned up, they saw the rear three carriages in the station.
Right.
With the fourth, or in other words, the rear car of the second load of three carriages, about a third on the platform, two-thirds in the tunnel.
Yeah.
That meant that in front of the third of the carriage that they could see were the remainder of that carriage and two other carriages.
So there's a whole load of stuff in that tunnel.
Virtually a whole tube train in front of them. Now, each carriage is 52 foot long, 15 metres.
Right.
So that's 156 foot or 47 metres for all three carriages.
Mm-hmm.
After the crash, the length of the front three carriages of that train measured 78 foot, 23 metres.
Wow.
The force of the smash had compacted those first three carriages to half their usual length.
This is like Quinton's Hill. It's concertina.
Exactly. Yeah. That is gross.
Yeah.
Because you can only imagine what you're going to discover.
The people in that front carriage has been crushed together.
Yeah. In fact, when the emergency services eventually reached that front train, they found that the first 15 seats had been compacted into 2 foot.
Oh, my God.
24 inches.
2 foot?
That's nothing.
The whole 15 seats?
Yeah. That's...
Doesn't seem possible.
That's unbelievable. It is... Oh, God, I just can't even begin to think how horrible that would be. But I will just stress here exactly what happened to the carriages to kind of give you an idea of what situation they were in. The lead carriage, right, driven by Newson, that hit the wall.
Yeah.
The front of that carriage was in the wall, whilst the force of the impact had caused the rear of that carriage to raise off the ground.
Yeah.
It was actually partially buried in the roof of the tunnel, which is 16 foot high.
The back of it was?
The back of it was.
Oh, really?
So the front's in the tunnel, it's kind of gone up at the back.
Yeah.
Some of it's in the roof of the tunnel. Now, of course, what that means is that between the bottom of that train and the floor, there's a gap.
Big old gap.
Big old gap. The second carriage went into that gap.
Yeah.
The third carriage, which is the one partly on the platform, had risen over the back of the second carriage.
Yeah.
But the rear of that carriage, as we say, was still on the platform and close to looking normal.
Just sort of slightly raised.
Slightly raised, yeah. That is the scene that the emergency services had to deal with.
So it'll be very dark. Mm. All right, they're working in a tunnel. It's going to be extremely dusty, right? You know, the underground's like, even now.
It's dark at the best of times, isn't it?
It's dark, and it is still, even though they clean it loads, it's still quite a sort of dusty place to be, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
There's debris and dust. They have to have people called fluffers in the tube, you know this? They have people called fluffers, and their whole job is to get rid of human hair.
See, I think of fluffers as something else.
Well, exactly. It's a shame that they not only have they got a horrible job to do, but they, the first thing people think they are is giving people erections on porn sites.
Oh.
So, yes, it's very dusty and lots of debris down there, right? Oh. But the thing that people don't really realise as well about the tube is that the trains themselves moving through the tunnels is part of the ventilation system of the tube.
Yes,
it pushes hot air out and pulls cool air in. Mm. So the trains stopped. It got extremely hot in these tunnels.
Oh, desert temperatures, wasn't it?
Desert temperatures, right? Extremely hot. They actually had to start running trains very, very soon after the disaster just to get the air to cool down.
Yeah, I mean, obviously not on that platform, but it's a big station.
Yeah, just to try and get that circulation moving again. One firefighter said, Phil?
One of the greatest problems was the intense heat down there. It must have been 120 degrees, 48 degrees Celsius. It was like opening the door of an oven.
At first, rescuers were only allowed to work for 15 minutes at a time, like Chernobyl, because of the intense heat.
And don't forget, the emergency services had to work from the third carriage moving forward towards the first two carriages. There was no, you couldn't get to those other carriages unless you moved, worked forward. There was no sideway in.
You
had to go through the carriages. Because of the force of the impact, those carriages were now half their usual length.
Yeah.
It's horrendous. I mean, one of the firefighters said that as he was cutting away with his hacksaw in the dark, a hand came out and grabbed me. And I looked down and this hand grabbed my arm.
And for a split second, I thought, where'd that come from? Because, And then another hand grabbed me, and I was being pulled in. They grabbed hold of my tunic, and my torch got, and it was dark. And everything went in very slow motion. And suddenly, I was one of them. I knew exactly how they felt. They were trapped, and they wanted to get out. They'd seen me shiny buttons, they'd seen the torch, and they thought, well, if you got in, you're going to get out, I'm going to be with you. And you ain't going to go out without leaving me. You're not going to leave me in here.
Yeah, stuff of nightmares.
The only journalist allowed into the tunnel, a guy from the Daily Telegraph, described the scene as a horrible mess of limbs and mangled iron. And just to ram home the horror of this, Phil, there was a 19-year-old police officer on the train who was a passenger, and she had to have her foot amputated at the scene just to set her free.
Oh, Christ.
A rescue worker who was there said, when the decision was made, I placed myself between the tunnel wall and the train and supported her whilst the surgeons carried out their procedure.
Christ.
Just to get her out. So, as I say, a scene of absolute horror.
Two other quite weird and unforgivable incidents happened which hindered the emergency services. I can't quite believe that this happened. There was a hoax bomb scare right in the middle of it.
Why would you do that?
I mean, these are the days of Wearside Jack, isn't it? Like, Wearside Jack was a guy who pretended to be the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's an age of these sorts of hoaxes.
You're right in the middle of IRA
right
bombs
in the IRA,
as well.
The troubles. But the second one is just the most unforgivable thing I've ever heard. During this complete mayhem, some bastard, a school teacher, put on a white coat and pretended to be a doctor. He was just wandering around pretending to be a doctor. What's he getting out of that?
He's a school teacher, so he's got brain.
It depends what kids he's doing, I suppose. Well, he might just be counting out sponges. Yeah. You don't know.
But, you know, what are you going... I really need to help. I can offer something here. And the only way they're going to let me do this is if I'm going to have to pretend, otherwise they won't let me do it because they'll probably like have rules.
Yeah.
Or I want a bit of adulation.
I think it's the hero adulation.
It's vile.
It's the people who put on medals and go on parades, isn't
it?
It's that, I think.
I mean,
he's obviously mentally ill, I suppose. Was it a guy?
Yeah.
That's always a guy. It was not until 13 hours after the collision, the last survivor was rescued.
God,
13 hours. And it took hundreds of police, ambulance staff, members of the Salvation Army, and more than 1,300 firemen, 4 days to retrieve everyone on board. The last body to be recovered was of the driver, as you would imagine, because they're going through the train and he's the...
Oh, my God.
Leslie Newsom was the last person they found. 41 people had died in this horrible tragedy. 82 were injured, some very seriously. Essentially everyone, you know, in this...
Certainly in the first three.
In the first three carriages. Two further people died later on from their injuries, bringing the total fatalities of this tragedy to 43.
So that's 42 passengers plus Leslie Newsom, the driver.
Yes. Clearance of the wreckage was not completed until the 6th of March, a week after the tragedy. It took ages.
God, that's how bad it was, a week.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the platform didn't open again for service until the 10th of March, 11 days after the accident.
I wouldn't have wanted to be on that first train after the accident, even though it was probably the safest tube trip ever taken.
Isn't it?
I mean, you are not going to screw up the first train back into Moorgate, are
you? No, no, you are going to be concentrating. It's a little bit like, when's the safest time to fly? Oh, September the 12th. Get that holiday booked, because they're going to be concentrating. That's a disaster, but why did it happen? It's a mad one.
It is a mad one. It's just so creepy with the driver just staring ahead. But
it just sounds like he drove his train into a wall. On the face of it, it feels a bit German Wings.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? German Wings, the man who drove his, who flew his plane into a mountain. But I think it's a bit more complicated than German Wings, because he was suicide, right?
No, yeah, that was deliberate. It's a weird one. I mean, needless to say, the investigation into all of this started straight away. The first thing the investigators wanted to do was check that the brakes on the train were okay. To do this, they retrieved the braking system from the crash train and then put it into another train. System was found to be working absolutely perfectly.
But wouldn't it be knackered?
The braking system runs throughout the whole train.
Oh, yeah, good point.
So obviously, yes, the front couple of carriages or
they
whatever.
They can take it from elsewhere.
But you can take it from elsewhere. The whole the pressure gauges and the system would be the same.
And it would make sense as well, because the brakes failing wouldn't mean the train sped up.
Well, there's people who think it sped up. That we don't know. It either continued at exactly the speed, its maximum speed, or he upped it a bit.
Oh, he upped it.
We don't really know that. So that adds to the mystery of this all. But the fact of the matter is, the braking system was working absolutely fine on this
train. The brakes.
The problem seemed to be that driver Newson had simply made no attempt whatsoever to apply the brakes. Another thing they wanted to check was something called the dead man's handle.
Dead man's handle.
Now, what this is, is a lever that the driver manually keeps pushed down during the operation. The idea is that if a driver suffers an illness or collapses whilst driving, his hand would naturally stop being pushed down on that handle. And when that happens, the train would automatically apply the brakes and come to a stop. All trains have that. Even I've got it on my little train I drive up and down.
Have you?
I've got two sorts. I've got a pedal foot pedal, or I've got a sensor.
Could there be a horrible accident on your train?
Well, it's only a little train, but it's 13 miles an hour. It weighs quite a bit. When it's packed, that hits you, you'll be killed.
Yeah.
As was the case with the brakes, turned out there was nothing whatsoever wrong with that dead man's handle on this doomed train. Driver Newson had just kept driving the train as normal on full speed into the wall.
Wasn't the dead man's handle.
And also wasn't anything else they tested on the train. So you got that conclusion.
Yep.
They turned to driver Newson.
Well, yes, it can only really be one thing now, can't it?
But could a seemingly happy, healthy man really have just driven a packed train straight into a brick wall?
The post-mortem examination on driver Newson confirmed the eyewitness statements taken on the day.
How do they do that?
X-rays, Phil.
Right.
Remember X-rays?
Do.
X-rays taken of Newson's hands and forearms proved that he had not raised his hands before impact. He hadn't protected his face. Like, human beings are like...
It's a reflex, isn't
it? Like, it's like not... It's keeping your eyes open when you sneeze. Your body won't do it. But he had kept his arms on the dead man's handle and the steering wheel. And X-rays proved that, right? The investigation concluded that the cause of Newson's death was shock from multiple injuries on what otherwise appeared to be a perfectly healthy man. The medical examiner found no drugs or poison in him at all and absolutely nothing to suggest he'd had a seizure or a brain disease of any kind. Right. There was no indication that he had a heavy drinking habit or anything like that.
Weird, so weird.
However, another examiner concluded that the 80 milligrams per 100 millilitres of alcohol in Newson's blood indicated that he had been drinking of the morning of his death. How much booze is that?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because this became the subject of a serious disagreement in this inquiry amongst toxicologists and people doing the post-mortem. Some felt that that was a high enough level to make a person more susceptible to a lapse in concentration, while others did not.
It's sort of tiny bit tipsy.
Yeah, I would point out that at that level in those days would not have got you done for drink driving.
Oh, so it's tiny.
So it's not much at all. One examiner said that the level of alcohol in his body might have actually been caused by the growth of microorganisms and fungi in a decomposing body.
So it's his body fermenting.
Well, you do
than the
get that, don't yeah. you? And don't forget, he's been there 4 days in that amazing temperature.
Oh, God, he has as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. It is interesting, though, because there were tests taken from victims who had been in the train at virtually the same amount of time as him, and they were less.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. But there's no conclusive answer, because it's a debate that is actually still talked about in medical circles today, and there's no definitive answer
but
on it.
But you can say he wasn't pissed.
Newson was known to hardly ever drink.
Yeah.
The official inquest stated the following after talking to his wife, Mrs. Newson.
The picture that emerged was of a man of quiet, orderly habits who had never suffered from any serious illness and had never had blackouts or attacks of giddiness. He was not a daydreamer and he had never been known to overrun a traffic light when driving his car. He was not a drinking man, though he enjoyed an occasional glass of brown ale. He rarely touched spirits, though there were both whiskey and Bacardi in the house, and Mrs. Newson had never known him to take a tot of spirits before going to work on a cold morning or to take spirits to work with him. Nor, to Mrs. Newson's knowledge, did he take any sedatives, tranquilizers, or sleeping pills. He did not eat any breakfast, but always made himself a cup of tea before going to work. Both witnesses said that he was never depressed and loved his work as a motorman.
This is a normal man who does not drink.
And even though it's easy to sort of cover up depression and all the rest of it, and you know, and especially at this time, men don't talk about their feelings and all the rest of that, I do take this as face value. I think he was just a dude.
Yeah.
He's just a dude going to and from work.
Yeah.
I don't feel to me like he was pissed or depressed or anything like that.
I don't think he'd even had a drink.
I think the fermenting thing rings true.
Yeah. I say all levels in other victims, but...
Well, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, isn't it though?
When it comes to fermenting corpses.
In addition to what his widow said at the inquest, the colleague, remember the one who Newson shared his milk with, you know, and he said...
No booze in the milk.
Exactly, couldn't smell anything. And all the other people that day who came into contact with him said, no, he just appeared perfectly normal as ever.
You can tell if someone's pissed at work.
Yeah.
Because it's funny, isn't it?
So, I think we can rule alcohol out of the question. But if we do rule out alcohol, you have to look at what else there was.
Yeah, what's left?
There's three other things, right, as to why Newson ended up doing what he did that day. Some sort of lapse of concentration.
Okay.
An unknown medical condition.
Yeah.
Suicide.
Right. Number one film.
Lapse in concentration.
It's not uncommon, is it, to daydream while you're at work?
God, no.
The last thing I ever thought about when I was at work was work.
No, it's all fat bottom girls, isn't it?
Exactly. Big Queen fan. Many drivers have reported that the monotony of the tunnels cause them to forget where they are, you know, and they drift off into other areas of thought and drive on the train as a sort of autopilot. You've done it on the motorway, right?
Yeah.
Driving on the motorway, sometimes I'll be in Brighton, I don't remember any of the turn-offs I've taken.
Or when you're driving along the motorway, you go, where did that last 5 minutes go?
Yeah, I got no idea.
And then you go, was I paying attention?
You are watching. It's just that you don't really need, your whole brain doesn't need to be on it because you're just driving. And if something does happen, like, you're back online in a second, aren't you? You're back online.
Yeah. It's like the wake-up button is pressed on the keyboard.
Right. Oh, it's a horse on the tracks, you know, back online.
No password needed. Straight there.
The reason I think this is bollocks is that when you went into the station, you'd have been like, oh, I'm at the station. Well, like if you were daydreaming.
Yes, you'd have lights. The train's going fast, so it's going to be going over the rails like...
Yeah, it's going at 35 miles an hour as it goes into Moorgate Station. It's going to be rumbling.
Yeah. And something else to tell you, those seats he was sitting on didn't have armrests. So he would have been jolted.
Yeah, exactly.
So he'd been like...
And if he really had fallen asleep, which we know he hadn't because loads of people saw him with his eyes open, he'd have would have come off that handle.
Yeah.
Because that's what that handle is for. Number two film.
Unknown medical condition.
At the inquest, two medical conditions were raised as possible causes.
Ooh.
I think we're getting to the nub and crux of it here, film.
I think you might be right.
Transient global amnesia.
Very, very good Ibiza chill out band.
Oh, wasn't it though? Oh, God, the end of the 90s. And akinetic mutism.
Right.
Which is, I think is what my dad suffers from. Transient global amnesia first is a brain condition, film.
Right.
You've heard of them? It's a brain condition where the blood supply to part of the brain that controls memory is temporarily cut off.
Right.
This sounds to me like a sort of stroke. If an attack of this were to occur, Phil, mm-hmm. some people can still continue to function and do things like drive cars or work for Deliveroo. However, it is extremely rare, I mean mega rare,
right.
And the inquest concluded that even though it was a remote possibility, it was an unlikely one. So this is sort of everything carries on, but he's not really in his own mind.
Right, okay.
In this one. But it's so rare that they think, no.
Onwards.
Akinetic mutism. Akinetic mutism affects the whole brain, right? Mm. It's like an electrical storm in your brain.
Right.
All of those receptors in your brain are just going mad, going on and off all over the place, right. firing everywhere. However, this, again, was ruled very unlikely because it's super rare.
Okay.
Right. Those are the two that are in the inquest.
Yeah.
But since then, people have suggested a condition called a temporal lobe seizure.
And I say this with no medical training, knowledge or experience. Yeah. I think it's this.
Oh, right. Okay. It's a condition where you get an epileptic fit passing through the temporal lobe. The temporal lobe. What do we know about that?
Part of the brain, mate.
Is it the one that does something to do with time in that? Because it says temporal in this. I did film studies. What did you do? Political science?
Yeah.
We're out of our depth here.
The front, isn't it?
It's the front. That's the cerebral cortex, the front, isn't it?
Is it?
Anyway, it's the temporal lobe.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Now then. That's interesting because the description of him driving the train, rigid in his seat, looking straight ahead with his eyes open, does fit exactly with temporal lobe seizure.
Yes, because you can maintain your body posture,
yeah.
but you become quite out of touch.
Sounds like the sort of thing that happens,
yeah.
right?
And it's temporary.
And it's temporary.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have been able to find evidence of it in an autopsy, for example. Sounds pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
Now, it's fair to say that no brain conditions were found in Newson at the time. But does that mean they weren't there, Phil? It was 1975,
yeah,
after
1975
all.
Was everything looked at. I mean, what new medical understanding conditions have come to the fore since that time? Was this even looked into, temporal? Yeah. There was no mention of it.
Now it might not be a mystery at all. They might go, oh, that's what's happened to him.
Yeah.
You know? But to this day, doctors are still quite divided on this issue and it's still being debated. Mm. Now, Phil, this brings us to the last thing. Suicide, Phil.
Mm.
The act of murdering yourself in it. Nobody reported Newsom as being depressed. I don't think he committed suicide.
No, I don't.
On the day of the tragedy, he had £270. That's not a small amount of pounds.
No.
Right, and it's the 70s, so what's that, 7 million quid?
That would have got him a moderate Ford Escort.
It would have got him a car. You don't. If you're going to kill yourself, you'd spend that money on hookers.
I know I would.
Do people still say hookers? Probably not. He made that statement to his colleagues about wanting some milk left in his flask.
Very definite about wanting some milk, sugar.
A man who is worried about how much milk he owns is not thinking of killing himself.
No.
I just don't believe
He's got bigger fish to fry.
Unless, like, he is a master manipulator, like I said. Unless he's absolutely, like, I need people not to know. At the inquest, Newsom was described as nothing but perfectly normal. And as we stated before, he loved his job and he was happy.
Yeah.
He just didn't kill himself. I just don't believe it.
I totally agree. I know you can say things like, well, you never know if someone's going to... And I get that. You don't, but...
You'd still protect your face.
Yeah.
But there is one other theory, Phil.
All right.
Ghosts!
Oh, man alive.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I'm getting less so as I get older.
Getting less so?
Yeah.
Really? I'm getting more so.
Are you?
No. Of course, don't. No such thing as ghosts. I'd love to see a ghost.
Yeah, I would too, yeah.
I would, but it's not much chance of it because they do not exist, isn't it? The website Spooky Isles asks...
God.
Did a ghost cause the deadly crash of a London tube train at Moorgate in 1975?
I can personally answer that, Phil, with a two-letter word that starts with the letter N.
Yes, yes. I don't think. I mean, what do they think a ghost just? What could a ghost do?
Ghosts are notoriously wily operators. We all know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
They never stick around to explain, do they, ghosts?
I think it's cobblers. But should we see what Spooky Isle said?
Absolutely.
A few weeks before the accident, during the winter of 74-75, workmen were carrying out repairs at the station and they reported they often saw a man dressed in blue overalls walking towards them in the tunnel at night. At first, they assumed he was a fellow worker, but as he approached, they were terrified to see that his face bore the look of indescribable horror. As they looked, the figure of the man carried on along the track before vanishing into the tunnel wall. Later investigations revealed that another workman had also seen this ghastly apparition, and it is thought to be the ghost of a maintenance worker who was killed by a train on that stretch of the line many years before. Following the Moorgate disaster, many newspapers, learning of the ghost sighting, reported that the spectre may well have been seen by the driver, causing him to have a lapse in concentration, and that led to the fateful crash.
Bollocks!
Yes, bollocks that, innit? But let's break it down.
Right.
He missed a few signals beforehand, didn't he?
Yes.
So for how long has he seen this ghost?
Yeah, he must have been a big ghost.
Big old ghost.
Running at the same speed as the train, backwards with his horrific face showing. Absolute hogwash.
Because if it was a ghost he'd passed, bearing in mind there's no space in the tunnel, it's just a wall, he'd be looking to his right, wouldn't he? Going, oh, what's that over there? Yeah. And then not seeing the thing. No, other than the fact that there's no afterlife, I think that that's probably nonsense. Good story, though.
Good story.
I mean, loads of really good ghost stories on the tube. Oh, I bet it's a spooky place.
Yeah. Always Victorians, though, isn't it? That's the trouble with ghosts. Oh, yeah. Always Victorians.
Yeah, it was a very good time for ghosts.
Yeah. Never Kevin, who fell off his bike in 1980, is it?
Exactly. And I was thinking, like, you go to the beaches at Normandy, it should be packed with ghosts.
Should be, shouldn't it?
No.
Never are.
Never seen one.
Not one.
Okay.
Absolute cobblers.
So, what's the aftermath, Phil? Aftermath me up.
The findings of the official inquiry into the report were published on the 4th of March 1976. And as I'm sure keen listeners to this podcast will know, it found that who was culpable, Phil?
Absolutely nobody.
Absolutely nobody.
We haven't had a single inquiry that's blamed anyone.
No, it's never done anything, has it? The verdict was accidental death, both in respect of driver Newson and the 42 passengers who lost their lives.
I mean, bang on though, right?
Yeah, what can you do? No real answers.
No answers, no closure, nothing.
Nothing. Bloke drove his tube train into a tunnel wall. Nobody knows why. Did he have a brain condition? Was it suicide? Was he drinking? Did he see a horrific ghost running backwards at 35 miles an hour consistently?
All I can say is got to be one of them.
The line itself, the Northern City Line, got taken over by British Rail in 1976. Although that was actually in the offing before the disaster, there was always going to be a transference. It's still run by British Rail now. As I think I mentioned to you, it's part of London Overground.
Oh, really?
So if you want to see a perfectly normal-looking train in a tube tunnel, that's where you want to be going.
Excellent.
Probably the main thing that happened, though, is that there were changes to Platform 9 at Moorgate. Okay, that big, horrible concrete and brick wall, that was painted white, and a massive, heavy-duty set of buffers was put in the end of that runoff line. Also, London Transport introduced a rule that trains entering terminal stations should not go more than 10 miles an hour.
Well, that doesn't help, does
it? Well, it's not going to stop a madman, is it? But give them their dues, a nice touch, isn't it? They tried. Probably the main thing, though, is the introduction of something that is informally known as the Moorgate Protection, as I prefer to call it, the Tube Condom.
And that's from... Tube Condom is from this disaster, is it?
From this disaster, yeah. It was introduced in 1978, and essentially Tube Condom is a system that automatically applies the brakes if the driver fails to do so whenever he travels over certain points of the line.
Right. So if it's going too fast, it cuts out.
Yeah, something trips on the line and it's like, whoa, you're going too fast, slows the train down.
Perfect.
I could get technical about this, Phil, but really, who gives a toss? Does it work? Yes. Does it potentially save lives? Yes. Great stuff. Move on.
There's a memorial to the victims of the disaster that was put up in 2013. Have you seen it?
I haven't, no.
You can find it in Finsbury Square, about 410 metres north of Moorgate Station.
Oh, okay.
There's also a memorial plaque that was put up in 2014 on the side of the station building. Looking at you, Le Mans, they got two plaques.
Yes, Le Mans's got nothing. Although, I often find with these disasters, these sort of memorials go up a long time after.
Loads after.
It's almost like we're more sensitive now than we were then.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the really horrific, sinister, ghostly and weird tale of the Moorgate Tube disaster. Has it made you more scared to be on the tube? Were you ever scared to be on the tube?
No, I don't like it.
Even after 7/7?
A little bit.
After 7/7, you did look around, didn't you?
I'm more aware of the brands of various rucksacks.
Yes, rucksacks is what 7/7 did, isn't it? I'm scared of rucksacks now, not the tube.
Yeah, I'm not scared of a driver hurtling into a wall.
No. Terrified of millets. So, Phil, the Moorgate tube disaster, our fault or God's fault, Phil Lucas?
Well, the cause of the accident died with the driver, didn't it? Could have been God's will.
Right.
But it looks like, as humans, driver Newson, it was probably our fault.
Not if he saw a ghost.
Well,
if he saw a ghost, then that's afterlife. That's God's fault.
Well, God does act in mysterious ways.
Well, let's think about all these things, right? So suicide, our fault, right? Brain seizure, God's fault. 50-50. Ghost, God's fault.
Yeah.
So that's 2-1, God's fault.
You're forgetting lapsing concentration.
Oh, that's our fault.
Yeah.
So that's, it's 50-50, God's fault or our fault.
Yeah, I think this is one where we can't be sure of this. Like what happened? We don't know what happened. We can't be sure whether it was our fault or God's fault.
Is this a first that we can't come down on either side?
Yeah, I think it is.
Arthur does, no one, six of the other.
I'll go and plot it at home on my lonely spreadsheet.
Thank you so much for listening. We've had a couple of lovely reviews since our last podcast about the Le Mans disaster. The Le Mans disaster podcast was quite popular, which I was surprised about.
I was surprised,
because I don't know
if
I mentioned it during the podcast, but motor racing's terribly boring as a sport.
No, I don't remember that.
So I was surprised it got such a good response. Thank you so much for the reviews.
Yes, we had a couple of reviews. So we'd like to say thank you very, very much to Russell Collins.
Thanks, Russell.
He said we had a brilliant, super funny podcast. Thank you very much. Really, really appreciate it. We had another one from Tahira Faye. She said he was learning a bit.
Nice.
Learning a lot from our podcast, but also laughing. Thank you very, very much indeed, both of you. That's very kind of you. Most appreciated. We also need to say thank you to some American listeners, don't we, Phil?
Yeah, we found a load of American reviews of the podcast. They were all lovely. There was about sort of six of them, wasn't there?
We'd never seen them, had we?
Never seen them before. And I tell you what, I can't find them again.
Oh, no.
So if you're an American listener and you've done us a review, thank you so much. For some reason, our British computers won't let us look at them unless
weren't they Apple Podcasts, but on the US site.
Yes, I guess the US Apple Podcasts.
Yeah,
site.
So we see the UK reviews, but we don't see the American ones.
Yeah, it seems completely insane.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a clever way around it. I'm sure, hopefully, if you know how we can do that, let us know.
Well, one of us buying an Apple Mac, I imagine, would get around that, but I ain't doing that.
good point, yeah. But no, thank you.
If you are an American listener, thank you so much for listening to us and send us a message on Twitter.
Yeah, they were lovely reviews, weren't they? So
they
thank you. We felt really bad that we'd have thought we'd have ignored you, which we'd never
felt
do.
Shunned.
Yeah, so thank you so much. So that was really, really kind of you.
We are on Twitter, obvs.
Obvs, that's where we like to be, isn't it?
What are we?
At CB Wallop.
I changed the Instagram handle this week to CB Wallop Podcast.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe to it on whatever channel you listen to podcasts on.
How does that help?
Don't know.
Well, if you fancy,
all the other podcasts say it.
Do
they? So we should.
Okay, well, if all everybody else does it, we should definitely do it.
Yeah.
If you are able to subscribe to a podcast and you subscribe to this podcast, that would be positive. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast this week. Phil, you got anything else to add?
No.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.